Hello everyone, my name is Isabella Ruta and I'm working on insurance contracts project, and not surprisingly we will be talking about insurance. The purpose of this meeting is to get your views on presentations issues for insurance contracts, specifically about revenue. However, I think we as a team are here for the first time discussing insurance issues with you, so I would like to give you first a quick, a little bit of background of what are we trying to achieve and what are we actually trying to fix. So I would like to make sure that we've got enough time to actually answering the questions about the revenue. So unfortunately, I would like to ask you to leave all the questions till the very end, so we can focus on the revenue proposals. So some might be surprised that we are now open to everyone and we want to discuss insurance issues with everyone, not only with insurance specialists. I think that the reason is because we've noticed that now there are companies that actually have blended different activities, also including insurance activities. And because of that, the aim of our project is also not only to improve comparability between insurance companies, but to make sure that all companies that have also insurance activity report those activities in a comparable and understandable way. I'm going to talk about the background information about the insurance project a little bit. What are the current issues with the insurance accounting? Well, there are a few. You have it on the slides. I would like to touch on those which I found the most, let's call it, disturbing. I think it's very difficult to find that there is a lack of current information. Even for long-term contracts, some of the contracts have assumptions locked at inceptions, not updated for a very long period until actually something happens. And another one is the lack of comparability between insurance companies and between insurance contracts, because now we have variety of models for insurance contracts. So what we are trying to do at a very high level, we are trying to increase relevance, transparency, and comparability by proposing a current accounting model for all insurance contracts. So coming back to slide three, what have we done so far? We thought it's a big project, so we split that into two phases. First was about improvement of disclosures. So people were allowed to actually record the amounts or measure, present the accounts according to what they have done previously. But we were trying to make sure that they explain what they are doing. The phase two, which we are currently on, is trying to improve the measurement and the presentation. On slide four, I was trying to make sure that what I said at the very beginning is right, and I've looked at some financial statements of some companies, and I found out that actually there is a pretty big number of insurance liability in so-called non-insurance specialist companies, and that posed again a question. So they need to prepare a consolidated financial statement. How can we make sure that the information that is there is actually comparable and understandable? On slide five, I would just quickly wanted to say that it took us some time. We already published two documents that we asked people feedback on. And currently, we are preparing to issue the third document, which is revised exposure draft, which is actually which has all the basic ideas and principles carried forward from the previous documents. But we're trying to improve our proposals based on the comments that we have received. And because of those proposals, try to enhance the information that is provided. Unfortunately, it brings also bigger costs of actually providing that information. On slide 6, I've noted what are the questions we will try to answer. I'm not going to go into details of those questions. I just wanted to say that we have 3 areas of focus for this revised exposure draft: its presentation, measurement, and transition. And today, we are going to focus on one of our proposals related to presentation. So the ISB proposed that for all insurance contracts, we will require to present volume information, which is premium and expense, similar to other industries, to make sure that we enhance comparability across industries and across all insurance contracts. So coming back to the questions I'm going to ask you today, I will ask, what do you think should be the pattern of revenue, and what should be the total amount of revenue that insurance companies should report? Slide 8 is touching to actual issue we are going to discuss. So I would like to give you a little bit of background, or a little bit of context of our discussions on insurance contracts in terms of the presentation issues. In the previous ED, we have proposed different presentations for 2 types of contracts, even though the measurement is seemed to be the proxy one of another, it is just a simplification. We propose different presentations. So for the simple contracts, we would have revenue and expenses similar to any other industries, but for those long-term, which I call more sophisticated ones, we would require to report net changes in the insurance liability, and you can see the line items which we proposed at the bottom of the slide. We have received a lot of comment letters, and they indicated that volume information is actually relevant and important for all insurance contracts. And they said that it's because it will allow a presentation format for all insurance contracts in the same way and meaningfully combine it and present all insurance contracts in the same way. And also, it will provide comparable information across industries.
Do you want to explain what you mean by volume information?
When I'm talking about the volume information, it's the premiums, which is revenue, and expenses, which for insurance companies would be predominantly claims expenses.
Thank you. Yeah. And Izzy, just on that, one of the things I know you had to explain to me is it's revenue for the performance obligations, but does not include the deposit.
We are going to talk about it. It's one of the questions for today.
That was the aha moment for me.
So now I will try to discuss questions and the answers that we were trying to investigate during our deliberation process. We've got 2 questions. One will be related to the pattern of revenue that we should present for insurance activities, and another one is related to the total amount of revenue that should be presented. I would like to ask those questions separately because I view them as a separate questions, and we can answer them independently. So on question on slide 9, we have the first question, and I presented a very simple example, which is trying to show what numbers we expect from different approaches.
Can I ask one general question? The desire to have comparability with other industries as regards presenting revenues, operating profit, does that result from the feedback, or is that an ISB desire in developing an insurance standard?
Can I just be clear on this, that this is about insurance contracts? And so I think the idea is to present insurance contracts consistently. Any company that has an insurance contract, to present it the same.
But I also think this comes back a little bit to the slide that that Isabella showed earlier in the day. What you're finding is more and more companies have some type of insurance activity on them, even though you wouldn't normally consider them an insurer. And so that volume measure is as important I guess the question is about how important is it to see a common volume metric over all the lines of business of a company that might also happen to do insurance.
But we also got a lot of feedback on the exposure draft we had that a lot of people wanted to see this. It's not us inventing it. We actually proposed not to have it. So it's put in after the feedback we got to have it.
And that applies to both operating profit and revenues?
No.
To one of both?
I think most of the feedback that we were getting were comfortable that there was an operating profit number on our original ED, so that wasn't really the issue.
Okay.
The issue that people were asking about is revenue, because that wasn't there. Sue?
Yeah, sort of teasing it out, splitting out the components out of this fairly complex recognition methodology. But I think the other issue that I was certainly hearing of is insurance is a different sort of industry. Some may not wish to invest in insurance. I think often that can be they just don't like insurance as an industry. But I think one of the objectives would be to make sure it's not the impenetrable accounting that makes it uninvestable.
To demystify
yes,
insurance.
Yeah.
And also, to summarize all of it, is we propose that volume information not necessarily may be relevant for all contracts. We get feedback, well, it is relevant. And actually, currently, many insurance companies are actually reporting volume information, and some of them even call it revenue. So we want to make sure that if we show the top line and we call it the same, it's actually comparable. So coming back to my example. Example is quite simple. So the insurance company is charging the premium. So the cash flows is 2,000 per each period, invoiced and paid each year. The total will be 10,000. The expense, which is just for the simplicity claims that are paid upon death, equals in total 10,000, but we know that the recognition of those claims will be an increasing pattern over time because we expect people to die later rather than earlier. So we have investigated three proposals for the pattern of revenue to be recognized. First one is the premiums written. So that's the blue one, if you have a colored version of slides. That will recognize all expected revenue to be received on initial recognition of the contract, which mean 10,000 at initial recognition. It will be irrespective of the payment, when the payment will happen, and also it will be irrespective of when the service is actually provided. The next proposed pattern of revenue is premiums due. This will be close to the cash basis, but would not necessarily reflect the service provided because it will be 2,000 over time. So the way the insurer is billed the client, that's how the revenue would be recognized. This is the proposal which is actually quite often used by the insurance companies now. And the third one, the last but not the least, is premiums earned, which would recognize premiums as the service is provided, irrespective of when the premiums is received. So if you can see, the green line is actually this increasing line, similarly as we expect the claims to happen. And we believe that this is the reflective of the obligation that the insurer is fulfilling. Therefore, this is the ISB proposal in the revised exposure draft that we are looking feedback on. So I was talking a lot. Now I'm interested in your views.
A different way of thinking about the green line is based on the way that Isabel has just described it, is that if you were to cut up a 50-year policy into 51-year policies, you would charge more at the end because the expectation of death is higher at the end. So that sort of, it's certainly in my mind, that was my aha moment, if you like, to use Mary's terminology.
I think I broadly agree with your proposal, the green one. I'm not sure I totally agree with the statement at the end of the red one, which is consistent with current presentation for most long-term contracts. There aren't that many contracts that I'm aware of that go on for 20 odd years that where there's no, where they're flat costs for the next 20 years. I mean, there's normally some ability for inflation to come in, and if they are flat for relatively long-term contracts, there's normally a presumption by the person who's taken on the contract that there's plenty of scope for efficiency gains so they can manage down the effective cost and deliver a more stable or growing profit stream over that period. Whereas the nature of this contract is that, you know, there is a demonstrable increase in risk of the probability of death unless we discover a cure for cancer or something, in which case you may get a benefit later on.
Yes, maybe. I'm sorry, maybe I should mention that.
Long-term insurance contracts.
Yes.
So I thought we were trying to draw parallels with other...
No. This is just three different lines for long-term insurance.
We are happy to draw the parallel, but this was about insurance contracts. So that's what normally...
Okay.
Insurance...
So you're saying the current accounting is the red line?
Yes.
Okay.
Most of...
Sorry, I thought you were drawing parallels with...
No, I'm sorry.
Long-term contracts.
Robert? If I understand the proposal correctly, and I'm oversimplify a little bit, revenue recognition is actually the revenue. Sorry, not the recognition. Revenue is sort of like the red line, but the recognition of the premium is sort of the recognition of the premium or the profit, maybe.
No, I think so. We divorce this completely from profit.
Okay.
And this is what makes it a bit of an interesting discussion, because the profit is determined already elsewhere.
All right. So green line is the premiums earned, but they're actually going to get roughly the red line, although it may be up.
Cash flow would be the red line.
Yes.
And so if you go back to your notes behind, it says there is a ED proposed that the ED suggests that there's a, if I understand it, you're going to say insurance contract revenue. Now, is that in the back, is that the green line you're proposing? So that's the green line you're going to put in. So from a cash flow, they're going to get, in the early years, there's going to be a fairly big mismatch between the revenue in the statements and the cash you got in.
And that would be our argument. Our argument is that insurance, a lifetime policy, is often premised on the assumption that you collect more upfront in cash.
I'm not arguing the economics. I'm racing forward to see how you'd interpret that and whether if you know what you're looking for, you'd find it right away. But if you this is this issue about whether you're communicating easily to people who aren't used to reading financial statements relating to insurance company. Now that I know that, it's going to be easy to find it. But until you knew that little fact, it...
Yep.
Okay.
I wonder, how does the balance sheet look? What would the balance sheet look like? Because this is P&L, I tend to understand why the premiums earned go up. I find that intuitive. On the other hand, what I'm missing here is death. It's somebody dies at a point in time, and what is, suppose the person dies at 55, will there be a big loss in that year?
So I think it's worth to mention that this example is based on portfolio. The insurance companies are thinking in portfolio terms. So this is a, let's say, 100 of people, and we expect like 10 people die at the very beginning, and then 100, 200, and the amount of people that is going to die, we expect to increase.
I understand that, but I just want to know, suppose you have one contract, and this is it, and the person dies at 55. What is the P&L impact
What the P&L impact is going to be, so bearing in mind what you're doing is over the life of the contract, you're building up a liability on the assumption that that event happens and it's an unexpected event. So you're expecting the person to die at 65 and they die at 55.
And you have...
That change in estimate is a loss in that year. So it's an unexpected event.
Yeah.
And you account for that unexpected event as a loss.
So you build up your liability over time, together with the estimated probability of death, the death tables. That's how you record your liability. And if you sell them at a, then you record your revenue. That's because that's what, how do you record a profit on this?
I mean, suppose you do a really good contract due to certain market circumstances, a flu outbreak, and everybody wants to buy, and you manage to get huge margins this year due to the market circumstances.
And what the model?
Do you want to record the profit all on day one or spread it out all across? And I would say, well, you take advantage of the current market circumstances and you take a day one profit.
I think these are now parts of the model that we're probably not changing. We're not changing from the previous exposure draft. It's a fair comment, and I think the answer that the board has come to and came to originally was that this is because it's not a market observable price. Who's to say if you're really making a margin or if you just don't have enough information to know that you're not?
I agree.
So hence we spread it.
Okay.
Peter.
I am on really thin ice here because I haven't come across an insurance company on the Stockholm Exchange for the last 10 years. This is my question. If this is a portfolio of premiums, over time, wouldn't that imply that the total revenue in the company will follow the red dotted line?
In a stable portfolio.
Yeah, a stable portfolio.
Yes, I think, again, this is a very simplified example. And I think what you're touching on is the whether it's a closed portfolio or whether it's actually a continuing portfolio. So this was a closed portfolio. So I don't have any continuous business. I'm starting, I'm finishing, that's it. So it was very, yes, I agree, it can be a flat line.
And I think we've had very similar questions asked of the impairment model and of a few others. If you take a steady state assumption, then a lot of things come back into alignment and you don't have to worry. But obviously steady state is not what generally happens. Carlos?
I came across a different case in a different industry which may add to your studies, which is Rolls-Royce. And I'm not sure if you're familiar with their accounting.
Rolls-Royce.
Because they have those 15, 20 years maintenance contracts. And you know, they basically provision, they have a higher provision for each contract in the beginning as compared to the end, basically because they think it's, you have much more certainty about the cost and the durability of a turbine in the beginning. So it's exactly the same chart. They show the chart, it's exactly the same.
Yes.
The problem for an outsider, you know, you can make a parallel with the insurance industry, that if you don't know exactly the kind of parameters that they are using, you have no idea about, you know, what kind of revenue will come up over the next 5 years. So, and even if you ask them, you know, they don't answer. So it's very, very hard to have a view about it. I guess you could make the same case on insurance because it's a bunch of insurance contracts. You may have a pattern, but if you don't have more information, you know, it's like you don't really know what's going on.
But those long-term maintenance contracts actually meet our definition of insurance contracts, but we ended up scoping them out because people already thought of them as more like revenue recognition. But economically, it's very similar. You've got an exposure over a very long period to a series of uncertain events, and you don't know how much it'll cost you.
Rolls-Royce is a very interesting example because this thing is huge.
I'm sorry, and they do it like this?
No, they don't. We scope them out of the insurance contract standard, or out of the proposal and into the revenue recognition standard so that they'd have to apply the normal revenue recognition requirements.
No, but sorry, but does that gives them the green line anyway? Doesn't
it gives them the green line anyway.
And that perhaps illustrates the point of what you're trying to achieve.
Because you want to get to the point where you don't need an insurance standard. Because
or you want insurance application guidance for the general standard.
Yeah.
Barbara? Is it worth explaining maybe why we're asking about the breakout revenue expense? Because some of the background I understand is because we've already decided how we're recognizing the margin and profit, but then the issue came out, how are you supposed to present the revenue and expense in that? Are you supposed to just show one item,
It's even further than that. The original proposal was that you would just report what we would think of as gross profit. So we would just report the margin. And this was in response to people who said almost exactly what you say, is if I've got Rolls-Royce, I'm going to be showing revenue and I'm going to be showing expenses. But if I'm now Rolls-Royce applying insurance, suddenly that revenue and expenses disappear. They wanted to be able to show both.
Derek, is it fair to say if you go back to slide 8, the footnote, the asterisk at the bottom, that the previous ED said show a net profit that was the sum of these items, and now we're talking about grossing it up into, so grossing up change in insurance risk would be the revenue less.
Yeah, that sort of covers the answer to Robert's question. So nothing we're talking about here changes the profit. We're just talking about changing the numbers we gross up to.
I'm sorry. If we determine how we're doing the profit, how can we report different revenues? What is the swing factor?
In essence, the swing factor is then the claims and benefits line. Now, bearing in mind, we were talking about it with Martin, we're accumulating a liability.
Yeah.
At a point in time, we access that liability in order to pay out.
Yeah.
Now, it's how we access that liability, and whatever the pattern of recognition is on the asset side, the pattern of recognition on the premium side would be, then drives the premium, the way that you recognize the costs as well. So that you end up getting that same answer. But in essence, it does feel a little bit like, because you know what two of the three numbers are, you're going to be plugging in the third number.
Yes, but also because there can be a very high, I'm not sure if I can use this word, volatility. So the liability can be very sensitive to any changes in assumptions. We've noted that it cannot be really plus, so we cannot say the bottom result plus claims and this is the revenue, because revenue is not really that volatile and we don't want to have all changes actually in the revenue. So we were stepping back and think, okay, if we cannot do plus, actually what we want to do. So we excluded some changes from the liability changes from the revenue line to make sure that it's actually more consistent with the revenue idea.
And just based on the comments up to now, is it fair to say most people are comfortable with trying to replicate a number that is equivalent to revenue in other standards? Move on to your question too.
Can I make one comment from Tokyo?
Harold,
can I make one comment? Amongst the three approaches, premium return approach is out of the question. So my choice is the premiums due and premiums earned. I like a premium due approach because it is close to cash flow. I worked for Japanese life insurance companies nearly 30 years, and it was good old days when the business was really growing. And the cash flow management is really important. We got a lot of premium income, but we have to pay a lot to our agents. So I think if the same thing will hold for the at least growing life insurance companies, the cash flow is important, then premiums too, I think will match for this kind of companies.
If we are comfortable now moving to question two. Question two is about what the total revenue we would like to expect to be reported by insurance companies. And we luckily have only two options. First option is quite easy. So whatever we receive, whatever consideration we receive from the policyholders will be reported as revenue, of course, plus time value of money. And the option two is actually asking the entities to exclude from the revenue deposit-like elements. Because for those long-term contracts in the premium, we will have actually two elements. We will have the part of the premium which is actually related to insurance risk, but many insurance companies is actually also trying to take the bank-like activities, so they are actually borrowing money to give back and earn the spread in between. So we say the banks cannot report those amounts of revenue, so we ask those companies to actually to exclude from the revenue presented the deposit-like element from the revenue. And that is our proposal, comparing to the first one, where the first one is quite often current practice for insurance company. And to be fair, there are some deposit components which are excluded, but only those which are what we call explicit, so very easily separated. So we have quite often two prices for both, and we can actually say what is the difference. But quite often we have also the what we call internal, the deposit element, which is there, but it's not that obvious what kind of amount it could be. We still ask them to estimate it and separate it. So again, what do you think about our proposal?
I'm afraid I didn't understand this deposit element. Your slide starts saying the assumption is the same in the previous example. So the premium of 2,000 invoicing paid each period and then 10,000 paid on debt. So what's the deposit element there?
It says all other elements are the same. So the premiums is paid 2,000 per period, so total is 10,000. However, additionally, the entity will promise to repay the amount of 2,000 with presumably some interest on it to the policyholder, and it is irrespective of any insurance risk.
So whatever happens, whether or not the individual passes away, you still get some money back.
Sorry,
so how do you treat that money you get back, Martin?
Well, if it sounds like a loan or something, so why don't we treat it just by how you would treat such a liability, and don't call it an insurance contract. It's just a contractual, and you can discount it at an appropriate rate and see what the interest component is.
So you would treat it like a deposit component. You wouldn't show it as part of revenue.
Sorry.
You would treat it like a deposit. I think that's along
yeah.
the lines of what
option
we should
two.
Yeah.
Option two.
If it sounds like a loan and seems like a loan,
it's a loan.
It's a loan.
Just make sure you understood. You know, some insurance products are similar to funds, investment funds. So if you are Fidelity, you would book as revenue the fee you earn on the fund, right? So what you're proposing, which is number two, is that if the product is similar to a fund, you should book just the management fee, not...
Yes.
That makes a lot of sense.
So again, consistent treatment across.
Yeah, of course.
Good.
I agree with that as well, although I would make the observation we don't have any insurance analysts in the room, and I'd be interested to know if they have different feedback, because clearly, you know, if you ask a generalist analyst, they're going to want accounting standards that completely stack up with businesses that they've got with similar fact patterns. So,
and in fairness, some of these accounting is actually quite similar to what happens now, so cutting out the deposit element, for example, is consistent. And obviously, outside of this forum, we're spending quite a lot of time talking to the insurance analysts. And I'm not sure we're getting a consistent view.
Yes. However, I think the problem is that predominantly we get the feedback which is consistent with what they used to see now. So as noted in the slides, they don't tend to disaggregate all the deposit component, and they used to present top line, which could be understood as revenue by many people, not always consistent with the revenue proposals. And I think that's why we were very eager to talk to you to make sure that those proposals actually make sense, because the feedback is mixed from the specialists.
How are you going to deal with reinsurance? Are you going to see that as a sort of effectively a cost of goods? So effectively the cost for the reinsurance. So the revenue number will be the gross receipt from the policy holder for providing the protection. And then any costs that you've got for a proportion of that being provided by the reinsurer, that will just go in as a cost of goods, yeah? Or calculated on the same basis, how much am I paying on it?
I think the problem with the reinsurance is you have different reinsurance contracts similar as you have different insurance contracts. And with the proportion, it sounds like quite straightforward, but we have also reinsurance contracts which are not proportionate. So, for example, the reinsurer is paying excess of amount rather than one third of the amount. And then it's actually more difficult, and we still want to have it consistent. So it's not always one third. But what we have proposed for reinsurance contracts is to present expenses and income separately from insurance contracts, because we view them as separate contracts with separate risks.
But there is a problem as well with separating out the deposits here for the reinsurance, because if you think of it, you've got 100,000 individual policyholders. You might have a contract that doesn't guarantee any of them individually any return of their deposits. But then when you reinsure that, once you've brought it up to a larger portfolio, that there might be an amount in there that's guaranteed to be repaid in some circumstances. So you might end up with some funny results if you separate nothing on the revenue line, but you separate something out on the expense line.
Robert.
A couple of house cleaning deposits seems to make sense, although I did notice with some humor that under the example you've given, there's automatically a day one loss, because you can't, on the numbers you gave us, there is no revenue year one.
But it's
an interesting, I think it's actually, it's an interesting artifact. There's this big question about whether insurance contracts, insurance businesses, there's always a day one profit, but almost by chance, a lot of insurance companies will say there's a day one profit when they sell the contract. You hear that constantly. And this particular contract, it's absolutely clear, because the deposit is equal to the first year's payment, and you have some sort of insurance liability. Your example clearly is an example where there's a day one loss, and that's okay, but there is a day one loss on this one.
But maybe to be perfectly clear, I'm not sure if you touches on that. When we disaggregate the deposit component, it will be disaggregated from premiums and from expenses, the same amount. So we don't necessarily see a loss only because we disaggregate the deposit component.
Point taken. So I'll leave this one aside, and I want to go and make a comment about insurance, the input you've been getting from insurance users, and I participated in some of those conversations, and some of them are clearly, we want the old method and don't change it, and there's a lot of noise in the commentary you're receiving. There are some reasonable insurance user specialists who have some arguments that I think are worth sort of pulling up. At a high level, one is this concept that there are some insurance companies that are actually trying to match the liabilities and the assets. They really are trying to hedge their portfolios, and that they are concerned that they can't necessarily do that. So to the extent that they are trying to do it and the accounting doesn't allow them to show that they've done it, we've got a problem, because we've got a mismatch that will fall through, and we have to make that's clear. The second legitimate was some concern about the remeasurement numbers, about creating noise, and there's some remeasurement issues that are going to create that could create enough noise that the real economics could get lost in the remeasurement noise, and the message there is you're going to have to segregate it so people realize this is a remeasurement noise, and the smaller real changes in the business, the ones that those analysts who are being really explaining how they're doing it need to be shown. So it's just, I found it very frustrating as a non-insurance user to listen to the users. Their messages were inconsistent. They weren't making sense, but there are some people in that group that have some legitimate...
Robert, do you think that's relevant to this issue of splitting the deposits out from the revenue, or is this more the underlying measurement model?
I don't think they'd have a problem with this. I participate in a user group where one of the good participants who's there all the time is a bank analyst and does insurance. And so he was very concerned about some of the aspects of it, but he was, for instance, prepared to say, I do want it to be market. I do want to have, there are market factors. I'm just worried that the market factor changes are so large that I'm losing information underneath. Whereas a lot of insurance analysts, I think, just say they wanted it at historic costs, and they want exactly what they want, and please don't change anything. And it's a very it's that is not compatible with how we do accounting in every other place.
Any other points anybody wants to raise?
Almost last spot on for tea break, which is a record for the whole day so far.
Thank you very much.
4:00, 3:00.
I wish we could do that.